Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 26, 2016. We'll begin with the obituaries. Wayne E. Crozier, 91, of Mount Pulaski, passed away at 11:55 p.m. Saturday, January 23rd, at his home. Services for Wayne will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 28, 2016, at Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski, with Reverend Jonathan Boucher officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 27th, also at the funeral home. Burial will follow the services at Mount Pulaski Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made in Wayne's name to the Mount Pulaski EMS. Carolyn J. Goodman, 64, of Decatur, passed away at 11:27 p.m. Saturday, January 23rd. Private family graveside services will be held at Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society or Macon Resources. Agnes O'Very, 94, of Clinton, passed away 12:25 p.m., January 23rd, 2016, at Manor Court, Clinton, Illinois. Services will be 2 p.m. Friday, January 29, at the Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with Reverend Michael Taylor officiating. Burial will follow at Oak Park Cemetery, Clinton. There will be no visitation. Memorials may be directed to the First Church of the Nazarene. Ralph W. Robison, 95, Brownstown, died Friday, January 22nd. Services, 11 a.m. Monday, Liberty Christian Church, Brownstown. Visitation 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday and 1 hour before services in the church. Burial, Liberty Cemetery, Brownstown. Arrangements by Geisinging Claggett Funeral Home, Brownstown. Memorials, Liberty Youth Group, Liberty Cemetery, Lighthouse Pregnancy Center, or Smile Train. Donna K. Wiggins, 65, of rural Oakley, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, January 23rd, in her home. A service to celebrate and honor her life will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 28th, at Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. She will be laid to rest at Garver Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, January 27th, at the funeral home. Memorials can be made to Garver Brick United Methodist Church. We'll turn now to an article from Shelbyville written by Sharon Barricklow, and the headline is Students Capping Off a Project. Finished with that water bottle? Chance Billingsley of Shelbyville wants the cap. Laundry detergent bottle empty? Cade Cull will take the top. Done with the butter tub or cottage cheese? Bryson Ward is ready to take the lids. Clean them and use them as part of an ambitious recycling project. The 3 7th graders will hope leave a lasting legacy at Moulton Middle School. Billingsley, Cull, and Ward are attempting to collect 400 pounds of plastic lids to recycle into a sturdy outdoor bench for the school grounds. The project is part of teacher Jenny Gergeni's Power Hour, a 48-minute enrichment period. The class gives students a chance to learn something they wouldn't learn during core classes, Gergeni said. It's also a chance for them to learn leadership skills and teamwork. Teachers at Moulton had brainstormed Power Hour ideas over the summer when an assortment, including the ambitious recycling project, were presented, the three boys jumped on it. The first part, this is a quote, the first part of the job was research, Culse, age 12, said. We had to look online and find the place who makes the benches. Billingsley, 13, said the boys contacted Green Tree Plastic of Evansville, Indiana, learning it would take 400 pounds of bottle caps and lids and $360 to create the sturdy outdoor bench they wanted. So then, quote, this is still quoting the student, so then we had to talk to Mr. Tomlin. Moulton principal Russ Tomlin said he held several meetings with the boys, determining how to collect and, more importantly, where to keep their growing cap collection. Every potential problem I mentioned, they found a way to address it, he said. After that, they took it to the school leadership team and presented the idea. Ward, age 13, said students and teachers bring their caps to collection boxes in the school. Continuing to quote the young student, Ward, then we all get together with everyone else in the class and wash them, he said. Mr. Tomlin was worried they would smell or attract bugs, so they have to be cleaned. The boys have spread flyers throughout Shelbyville asking for cap donations and have set up a school carnival and athletic events to rescue water and soda bottle lids from the trash. Donors can leave their plastic caps and lids in the school lobby. We have six trash bags full, but it's going to take a lot more, Cole said. Then we will have to figure out a way to get the money we will need. The students hope to have the project completed by the end of the school year, but if it goes into their eighth grade year, they're all right with that. It's been fun, Ward said. Billingsley, a student council member, hopes fourth through eighth grade students at Moulton will vote on the color of the new bench when the time comes. It would be cool if everyone had a chance to vote, he said. Then they can see what we were able to make from their trash, and I think it would be something they would be proud of. A photograph accompanies this article showing the three boys who are examining and sorting their various bottle caps collected as part of their ambitious recycling program. And they are Kate Cull, Bryson Ward, and Chance Billingsley. They have three plastic trash bags in red at their feet that hold the previously collected caps. Just below on the same page, we find another article relating to crime in the courts. The headline is, Charleston Man Gets Prison Term for Having Stolen Guns. And this was written by Dave Fope, a Lee News Service writer, Dateline Charleston. A Charleston man was sentenced to prison after he admitted having a stolen gun. Trenton E. McGee, 27, pleaded guilty to a charge of possession of a stolen firearm. Case records indicate that police found several stolen guns at his residence on November 7th. McGee's guilty plea resulted in a prison sentence of 3.5 years. Prison time was required, and the maximum possible sentence of 14 years was twice what was normal for the offense, both because of his criminal record. Coles County Circuit Judge Teresa Ryder also ordered McGee to pay restitution for the stolen guns, along with $800 in fines and court fees. The judge imposed the sentence based on the terms of a plea agreement that Assistant State's Attorney Rob Scales and Assistant Public Defender Lupita Thompson recommended. In a separate case, Ryder accepted guilty pleas from Mandy J. Dunn, 28, and Vicki M. Halbrick, 31, both of Vandalia, for obstructing justice charges, alleging they lied to police searching for Dunn at a Mattoon residence on December 16th. Dunn was accused of giving a false name to police, and Halbrook allegedly lied about whether Dunn was at the residence, both to try to keep Dunn from being arrested on a Fayette County warrant. Each woman was sentenced to 2 years of probation that included fines and jail time that was stayed, meaning it will be imposed only if there are violations. Ryder accepted plea agreements that Scales and defense attorneys recommended. In a drug case, a Charleston woman was sentenced to probation that will include an intensive treatment program after she admitted having methamphetamine. Jessica R. Tew, spelled T-E-W, 33, pleaded guilty to a methamphetamine possession charge, accusing her of having the drug on March 26th. Tew was placed on probation for 2.5 years, with terms including the Treatment Alternatives for Safe Communities program, which focuses on the type of treatment or counseling needed to end a participant's criminal behavior. Probation terms also included specific substance abuse treatment and payment of about $9,000 in fines and, pardon me, that's $900 in fines and court fees. Two and another suspect were also accused of having heroin they planned to sell, but a charge alleging the heroin possession was dismissed. The other suspect, Christopher A. Black, 34, Casey, received 2.5 years of probation when he pleaded guilty to a heroin possession charge in October. Here's a brief article from Melissa Healy of the Tribune News Service. It's related to children in middle-income countries. Driven by the growing availability of fatty, sugary foods and beverages in low- and middle-income countries, 41 million children age 5 and under are overweight or obese, a number expected to grow to more than 70 million children worldwide during the next decade, a new World Health Organization report says. Between 1990 and 2014, rates of young children who are overweight or obese have surged to 6.1% from 4.8%, said a WHO report released Monday. In lower middle income countries, the number of overweight and obese children younger than 5 has doubled from 7.5 million to 15.5 million kids. About half of those overweight children, 48%, lived in Asia in 2014, and 25% lived in Africa. The report prepared by the WHO's Commission on Ending Childhood Obesity has been 2 years in the making. The commission called for a whole-of-government approach to improve children's diets and promote physical activity. In addition to promoting breastfeeding for infants and promulgating guidelines for healthy eating, governments should implement an, quote, effective tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, unquote, to reduce their consumption by children and adolescents, the report said. Here's an article on the sports page with a Dateline of Decatur, written by Alex McNamee. Etherton joins St. Teresa staff. Mark Ramsey had other things on his mind than rushing to fill his football coaching staff at St. Teresa. The school made his hiring official on December 30th. His daughter got married one night later, so he was going to wait before making calls. But there was one person eager to express interest in being on his staff. Patrick Etherton knew of Ramsey from playing against his Central A&M teams in high school. During the past 12 years, Etherton, who coached Millikan football since 2004, head coach since 2011, got to know Ramsey on a more personal level. Mwikwa and Shelbyville were routine recruiting checkpoints. Ramsey's son, Curtis, was in the Millikan football program in 2014. Quote, every year I went to where he was. That was kind of the relationship, Etherton said. I've always respected what he did and how he's done it. Etherton was quick to reach out to Ramsey after hearing the former A&M and Shelbyville coach was hired by St. Teresa. He hoped his staff wasn't finished. It wasn't, so the two met to discuss it, and Ramsey saw a lot of good reasons for bringing the former Millikan coach aboard. Ramsey hired Etherton, one of four coaches he pegged, to complete his staff. Quoting Ramsey, I'm a Millikan guy. He's a Millikan guy. I think he's going to do a fantastic job. So that was a no-brainer. Ramsey has been thrilled with what he's seen so far from Etherton, who he said hasn't missed a day of the weightlifting program he started with the current football players. For now, Ramsey sees Etherton as the special teams coordinator, who will also coach receivers and linebackers, but he's not going to put a cap on it. Quote, he's been helping me with weights, and I think he's going to be a really good coach. Not that he isn't already, Ramsey said. Continuing the quote, I expect him, with his head coaching experience, to have some input and probably, as the season starts, we'll probably work together defensively, and I think his role will grow, and he's fitting right in. Etherton said it was Millikan's decision to go in a different direction with the football program, one he also played for and graduated from in 2000. He and his family, his wife Erin, son Rory, 3, and daughter Adeline, 1, plan to stay in Decatur regardless. They were too happy with the life they have in Decatur to leave, especially for Rory, who's autistic but is doing well with the setup he has locally. So Etherton applied for the St. Teresa head coaching job when it opened. I did. I interviewed, Etherton said. That's how much I thought it was a good place to work at. That was really the only place I applied. It was the only place I interviewed. I have a lot of ties to St. T from friends in the community. Quote, I know who else interviewed. I knew Ramsey interviewed. I knew that he's a Hall of Fame coach. And if he got the job, I was interested in being an assistant there. It's a great opportunity and a great situation. Etherton looked into many avenues to stay in the city, including farming. He grew up on his family's farm, and insurance. He said he had college football opportunities across the country after his tenure ended at Millikan, but he and his family would have needed to move. I looked at other opportunities outside of coaching, way outside, Etherton said. I came to the realization that I was really enjoy coaching. I enjoy the mentoring, watching the kids mature, grow up, and learn. Etherton looked into other high school football opportunities for head coaching and assistant positions, but said St. Teresa was the right fit. I wanted to put myself in position to have fun, be around guys that were loyal, guys in it for the same thing, Etherton said. I think that's what Coach Ramsey does. He does things the right way. Ramsey said his staff may include one or two more coaches by the start of next season. But for now, his regime includes Etherton, Jeff Myers, Tim Rue, and Mark's brother, Rusty. Myers, who coached with Ramsey at A&M in the early 90s, is returning to the area from Florida to take over a family business and help him run the offense. He was last coaching South Walton High School in Destin, Florida. Really, I knew Jeff was coming back anyways, Ramsey said. If I would have stayed at Shelbyville, I was going to bring him in. Rusty Ramsey was also with Mark at A&M. He's a versatile coach, but Mark said he'll focus on the defensive line and possibly tight ends and running back. Jacardia Wright, a sophomore running back, will be the Bulldogs' best returning player. Rue is a retired teacher, college friend of Ramsey, and Eisenhower alum who last coached in Pekin. He'll handle the offensive line. We'll turn now to the Decatur Tribune with Paul Osborne's articles under his column City Beat. And his initial headline is this: Impatient driver nearly causes serious accident on Route 36. An impatient driver of a big pickup truck nearly caused a three-vehicle accident with a really stupid move on Route 36 East one late afternoon last week. Catherine, my office manager at the Tribune, was driving home after the office closed and came upon the stretch of road near 27th Street where the utility company is installing new poles. The traffic narrows from two lanes to one lane where the work is being done, and those in the right lane have to merge with the traffic in the left lane. When Catherine slowed to let the car in the right lane move into the left lane in front of where she was driving, a polite move to make, that was more than the big pickup driver behind her could stand. He drove his truck up on the median and blasted by my manager's car. That should teach her a lesson about being nice, he probably thought, as the car she was allowing to merge in her lane was pulling into that lane in front of her. The result was that he almost swerved back into the left lane from the median and in front of Catherine's car and came close to wrecking three vehicles. What gives with a few of the drivers of the big, high-strung, loud pickup trucks? Do they sit so high in the seat that they think they can drive over everybody? Or do they get a year's supply of testosterone to put in their gas tank when they buy the vehicle? Give us a break. You aren't impressing anyone but yourself, and you are endangering the lives of everyone else on the road with the sound of your truck. Grow up. And another article that follows is about the city council. The headline is, Councilman wants legislation against heavily tinted vehicle windows. Good for City Councilman Patrick McDaniel for writing Senator Chapin Rose about submitting a legislative amendment to change the existing law on allowing dark tinted windows on vehicles. McDaniel wrote in part, I would think because of the recent problems and situations happening between citizens and law enforcement officers that going back to only very light tinted car and truck windows would not only make life easier and safer for all Illinois law enforcement officers when they are doing their jobs, but citizens would also feel safer. Quote, would you be interested in submitting an amendment to change the present state law banning once again dark-tinted windows on all vehicles in Illinois for reasons of additional safety for law enforcement officers and citizens? Included in that proposal, a proposed legislative amendment could be a provision allowing owners of present vehicles having the darkest shades of window tinting 1 year to remove the dark tinted windows from date of legislative passage, and 1 year for any new Illinois residents to remove their dark tinted windows from their vehicles. That was a quote from the letter. McDaniel told me, being Paul Osborne, that someone from the senator's office told him that Rose would get back to him on this issue. I hope so. Those extremely dark-tinted windows were once illegal, but in the legislature's wisdom some time ago, the members made them legal again, an utterly ridiculous and unsafe decision. The extremely dark tint is not to shield a vehicle driver's eyes from the sun, but to keep those on the outside from viewing what is going on the inside. How would you like to be a police officer approaching such a vehicle? You wouldn't know if the driver inside had a gun pointed at your head or anything else he or she might be doing, like making drug deals where no one can see what's going on. Allowing heavy tints on vehicle windows is putting lives in jeopardy. Shame on the legislators who earlier agreed to let this happen. There's an announcement that you may listen to the City Hall Insider Hour with Paul Osborne on Byers and Company at 7 o'clock every Thursday morning over News Talk 1340 WSOY. And that's all we have time for today. This has been Carol Bond reading with you the Decatur and Herald Review and the Decatur Tribune, dated January 26, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again.